Good morning from GPB News. This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. If the show sounds a little different today, it should. We are live from Savannah, Georgia, and we're here for the Savannah Stopover Music Festival. It begins today and runs through Saturday. The music you're hearing is from Savannah band Lulu the Giant. Little applause for our band. They are Rachel Shaner on bass, Alex Bazemore on guitar, and Daniel Malone on drums. Lulu the Giant plays in the Stopover Festival this weekend, and we will talk to Rachel later on in the show. But if you're in Savannah this weekend, we want to know who you're excited to see. And here's some of what you have had to say.
I'm Karen Gwynn. Super excited for all the bands at Stopover, but most excited for opening night in Kishibashi. I think that's going to be a killer show, and it's a great venue.
Larry Jack Sammons. All right, probably Lee Fields, looking forward to that. Jeff the Brotherhood will be good. Crocodiles, I like them on this line too.
My name is Justin Fedor. I'm looking forward to seeing Lee Fields and Tall Tall Trees. It's going to be great. You know, I mean, there's always some wild card of somebody I've never heard of before that blows me away. Last year I saw Twin Limb, and look at them now, they're Jim James' backing band. So, I mean, who's the dark horse this year at Savannah Stopover?
If you are listening and are particularly excited to see a particular band, let us know. You can call at 404-500-9457. You can also tweet us. It's at OST Talk. And remember, we might feature your comments on the show. Again, we are live at The Gray in Savannah, but the Stopover Festival is why we're here. It's been going strong for 7 years. More than 80 bands performed this weekend, including, as you heard, Kishibashi and also Julian Baker. Kane Lanahan founded and organized the Savannah Stopover, and we spoke with her earlier this week about who she's excited to see and hear this weekend.
You are 7 years in to Stopover Festival. What do you think you've learned now from that very first one?
Oh, my gosh, that's a great question. I think we've learned that, you know, if you have an idea that you kind of believe in and feels like it sort of has a root benefit to the region and the market, to just go ahead and sort of have the courage to give it a try. And when you keep believing in it, you know, a lot of other people will sort of surround you and help sort of grow it. And I think that's what we've seen happen, is something that we thought was a little gem of an idea, and we've just had more and more people embrace it, whether it's in the music industry or from bands or from you know, businesses in the community in Savannah. It's just really been kind of worthwhile and rewarding to see that.
How do you prevent a future similar to like South by Southwest or one of these other festivals that gets a lot of criticism for getting too big or losing its connection to the local community around it? How do you prevent that?
Well, we actually spend a lot of time thinking about it and talking about it. In fact, this year we actually cut back a little bit on bands. We've dropped from 100 to about 85 for that sort of very purpose. I think, you know, the need in the market is there for festivals that are curated primarily for the discovery of rising talent and that don't necessarily rely on huge headliners as draw. But with that, you have to sort of really stay true to the brand and the concept. And it's tempting to, you know, to kind of veer away from it. And we've just made the decision that what we're doing is what makes us unique. And so therefore, you know, we're going to stick with it, which sort of by default, you know, prevents us from really going in that direction of getting too big.
So tell me about some of the native bands, our Savannah and Georgia bands that you're featuring that we should keep our eyes on, or ears.
Or both. We have 13 bands from Savannah that are playing this year. And even within that group of local bands, we try every year to sort of shine a spotlight on some of the newer ones that are up and coming. And, you know, we've got some great ones like Lulu the Giant, who's just released her first debut album, and she plays the upright bass and is really amazing.
Na na baby, oh baby, won't you make some time to go?
Another band called Sansoma that's a little bit more in the electronic realm, and we love giving our local bands a chance to open for some of the national touring bands and, you know, pair them musically And we've seen over the years just some kind of great relationships come out of that. In terms of other Georgia bands, we've got, you know, Kishibashi coming from Athens, who's wonderful.
We would seem to be connected with the lifeline, heavy with summer gravity. Hey, big star, shine too bright and loud.
Cicada Rhythm from Athens as well, and Curtis Harding out of Atlanta, and D'Anthony Parks, who's a, you know, one of the top drummers in the world. He used to drum for Mars Volta. So we've got a good, I think, representation across the state. We've also got Flaco Torres, hip hop, wonderful act from Macon coming.
It's a groove, the feeling, you gotta move with it. If you don't know what to do with it, let me show you what to do with it. So tell me how you feeling now. It's the two of us here, body to body. Dinner has zest, the hotel, Giuliani. I let you walk.
We love, in the context of bringing a lot of the bands that are traveling down to South by Southwest, also bringing in some of our local Georgia bands.
So besides the local Georgia bands, what concerts should I not miss if I'm going to be at Stopover?
I really think what we're doing Friday night at Ships of the Sea, we're doing sort of a soul night, if you will, but we're combining different types of soul music, and Lee Fields and the Expressions is going to headline that showcase. And, you know, he's been doing, you know, incredible soul music since 1969.
But what kind, if you said it's different types of soul music, what kind is his?
I would say his is the more traditional, you know, rooted in the 60s and 70s.
Like Otis Redding style.
Yeah, exactly. Sam Cooke. There's a little bit of sort of 70s, you know, James Brown funk in his new album as well.
The way you hold me.
And then we have opening for him three acts. Ambrose, who's from Savannah and combines a lot of hip-hop with soul with a little bit of a New Orleans vibe. Lawrence, who's a younger band, all graduates from Berklee School of Music up in Boston, who have a four-piece horn section with them. And then Alana Royal from Nashville, who's doing what I would call a little bit more on sort of the punk garage side of soul. So I think it's going to be a really interesting mix that sort of all works together, but is a little bit different and sort of shakes up our, you know, what we think of as a traditional soul vibe. So that would be one. I think another one is going to be Julian Baker, who's playing Trinity United Church on Saturday, and she's a young 21-year-old singer-songwriter from Memphis, who's probably one of the most emotive singers and songwriters I've heard in quite a while. Her songs are very deeply personal.
Wish I could write songs about anything other than death. But I can't go to bed without trying.
It's almost like you feel like you're listening to someone's diary.
Yeah, she opens up a vein and lets it bleed.
Exactly. Yeah. And yet you're just right there pulled in with her, and you're sort of rooting for her. At the same time, you're sort of applying what she's singing maybe to your own personal life. And I just think having her in this church, which has amazing acoustics, you know, we're not joking with the fact that we're going to have some Kleenex boxes at the door. So she's been known to draw a few tears, and she's just, I just think she's an incredible talent.
So who's your outlier? Do you have a band that's sort of quirky, maybe really sticks out?
We do. This year we have a band from Ottawa, Canada, called A Tribe Called Red. And they are members of the Haluchi Indian tribe in Canada, and they're very outspoken about Native Indigenous rights. And they combine traditional hip-hop and electronic dance music with their own, what they call sort of powwow trance music. So they're an act that sort of defies categorization. They really sort of spread across multiple genres, and they're bringing a native tribal dancer with them who will be in full costume, and we're putting them in our 80s dance club called Club One. So I think that's going to be one you don't want to miss.
What makes the Stopover Festival rooted in Savannah? I mean, you talked earlier about staying true to the character of the festival. What is that character?
You know, I think a lot of it has to do with the fact, you know, Savannah's nickname is the hostess city. So it's very much about hospitality. We've always had bands that have come to the festival say how wonderful they feel treated and how open everyone in Savannah is. And we focus a lot on the little details. You know, for example, we feed all the bands every night in these big communal dinners. And Brian Husky, who owns Gaslight Group Restaurants, literally comes in and, you know, they make all the food and the bands eat together. And we give them these Savannah roadie bags when they arrive that are filled with, you know, goodies from that sort of represent Savannah and some of our sponsors. We help bands find a place to stay in local homes. Here we have a Facebook group page that helps bands, that pairs them with people who are willing to host them. So we have a lot of bands that come through and feel like, you know, not only did they have a good show and a good time, but they actually made, you know, lifelong friends, and that they recognize it's a market they want to continue to come back to.
So is it easier to book bands now than it was when you started?
It's much easier. In fact, you know, our dilemma is how hard it is to turn bands down because, you know, there's just so much really great talent out there today. We had, I think, close to 800 submissions this
Holy
year
cow.
To play the
800 and you only chose 80?
85. Yes. It's tough. You know, now a lot of that is you've got to make sort of their availability and affordability and interest sort of all line up together. But yes, we had close to 800 submissions.
Do you end up with any, I mean, we're about to end, but, you know, do you end up with some of those crazy writers we sometimes see where they're asking for, you know, only the yellow M&Ms?
We don't have any of those this year. We've had a few in the past, but you know, most of our bands are pretty laid back and pretty easygoing, and they might throw a few things in there that will give us a chuckle. But for the most part, if we feed them and give them some cold beers, they're pretty happy and easygoing.
That is Kane Lanahan, founder and organizer of the Savannah Stopover Music Festival. Kane, thank you so much.
Thank you, Celeste.
Thank you, Celeste.
We're live at the Gray in Savannah. A lot more coming up, and our house band is Lulu the Giant. Here is Lulu.
Breath dripping down my neck, but I can't seem to sweat, not even a little bit. Worry's not my kind of stress, just need to find a little peace of mind. Pull me close. I can't say that I mind it. Rainbow colors of black and white. I'm in the ring, shadow boxing light. Baby, you fight, I'll fly. Pull me close. I
can't say that I mind it. Pull me down, but baby, please don't let me drown.
It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. You've been hearing the music of Lulu the Giant. We are broadcasting live from the restaurant The Gray, and we're here for the Savannah Stopover Music Festival. This restaurant lives inside a restored Art Deco Greyhound bus terminal from 1938. But if you dial the clock just a little bit further back, The Gray would not be serving martinis and pina coladas. Georgia went dry on the first day of 1908, and it stayed that way for more than 25 years until the Volstead Act, it's known as Prohibition, was repealed. A museum opens here in Savannah next month to tell that Prohibition story from the first drop to the very last, and here to talk about it is the museum's manager, Kayla Black. Welcome.
Thank you.
Why would a Prohibition, this is the first American museum focused on Prohibition, correct?
Correct, yes.
So why does it need to be in Savannah?
This is by far the best place that we have found in the country to put a Prohibition museum. You know, you've got big names throughout the country like Al Capone and others along with him who have focused right here in Savannah. They called this the spigot of the South in the 1920s because huge amounts of liquor from the Caribbean was coming up through here and then being distributed throughout the Midwest. We were the funnel of alcohol into the Midwest of the country.
So was Savannah ever dry?
Technically, yes. In practicality, no. Savannah was never fully dry.
Well, they stood by their principles. Let's hear a little bit of tape. This is Reverend Billy Sunday. He was one of the most vocal critics of the sale of alcohol, a very strong supporter of Prohibition. So here's a clip of him delivering one of his sermons.
America needs a tidal wave of the old-time religion. America needs to be taken down to God's bathhouse and the hose turned on her. And the time isn't far distant when the wheels of God's judgment are going to go sweeping through this old God-hating world.
So you have collected a huge number of artifacts, and this archival tape is part of that. Where did you find all of this stuff?
One of the nicest things about putting together a museum about Prohibition is it wasn't that long ago. There's so much information, there's so much media, there's so much archival stuff available still because it was within 100 years ago from now. You can find things like this at the Library of Congress, you can find it at the National Archives, you can find it under people's houses.
Wait, did you say under people's houses?
Under people's houses. We actually have a still that we found underneath someone's house here in Savannah that has been there since people were cooking moonshine in Savannah during Prohibition.
Does it still work?
We haven't tested it, but I would say probably yeah.
The first thing I would do. All right, let's hear a little bit more sound. Many people will associate Prohibition automatically with this group. It's the Women's Christian Temperance Union. They fought very valiantly against the distribution of alcohol. So let's hear a clip of one of their members.
I solemnly promise, God helping me, to abstain from the use of all distilled, fermented, and malt liquors, and that means wine and beer. I don't drink, and I will do all I can to keep you from drinking.
Okay, so that's one point of view. So let's play one more. This is a clip of a newsreel. So even before repeal happened in 1933, I guess a lot of cities were much like Savannah, that they just went ahead and ignored the Volstead Act. Many businesses did not wait for that repeal to serve their liquor. So here's a clip from a newsreel in 1933, that year.
The lid is off in many places, with the downfall of Prohibition being celebrated in real old-time hilarity. Yes, and by the renewal of old acquaintances, hotels and nightclubs report a real pre-war spirit among those revelers. Boy!
Boy, so what do we not understand? Even though it was relatively recent, I think people don't really know the history of Prohibition all that well. What do we not understand or remember about it?
When most people think about prohibition, they think, oh, there was this 13-year period where people weren't allowed to drink alcohol in the country, and that was really the long and short of it for most people. But what we're hoping to portray in the museum is that this was not just all of a sudden people were like, you know what, I think we should not drink alcohol, and then they turned it on and turned it back on, or turned it off and then turned it back on. This was a process that started basically from the beginning of our country and lasts even till today. We have prohibition groups in the country that are still trying to push for national prohibition. The Prohibition Party is still an active organization in the country. So many of the different things that we have today have direct roots in prohibition. Organized crime, the income tax was passed as an amendment just so that we could have prohibition. Lots of different little things about our lives today have direct ties to prohibition and that 13 years.
And tell me about why prohibition got started in the first place, because there were a number of different reasons why people opposed it. Religion was one of it, but oftentimes women were involved because of domestic violence.
Absolutely, yeah. One of the biggest pushes, women were very influential in bringing prohibition in and then at the same time bringing prohibition back out. But this was in a time period where people had gone from drinking these low alcohol level ciders and beers every day and then drinking the same amount of those low level liquors into whiskey. And this was a time when women were not allowed in the social sphere. They were not allowed out. They weren't really going out in public to restaurants. Men would go to the saloon, which was an exclusively male spectrum of life. They would drink as much as they'd want. They'd come home, and then they would do whatever they wanted. And paychecks were being blown on alcohol rather than being spent on things that were needed in the house.
Okay, so let's hear again a little bit more tape. And this is John D. Rockefeller. Obviously, most of us know him now as a philanthropist, very wealthy industrialist. He was against prohibition, and it was for what that unintended consequence, which was the creation of organized crime. So here is a little bit of John D. Rockefeller speaking in 1932, calling for the repeal of prohibition.
Many of our best citizens piqued at what they regarded as an infringement of their private rights have openly and unabashed disregarded the 18th Amendment, that as an inevitable result, respect for all law has been greatly lessened, but crime has increased.
So what ended up killing the Volstead Act? Was it the crime?
You have to look at what the Volstead Act was as a whole. So the 18th Amendment was the first time in American history where an amendment had been passed that limited the rights of Americans. Almost every other law and amendment that had been passed expanded the rights of the American people, and this one really curtailed it. It also destroyed an amount of industry. And ultimately, when you come to in the 1930s, we've got the combination of the Great Depression and needing to find jobs for people, and the mere fact that you can't legislate morality. You can't. What ultimately happened is people were looking at this saying, this was something that was legal and fine, now it's illegal, and it was opening up pathways for small criminals to become big-time criminals, which is where we have the mob lords of Al Capone and Lucky Luciano, who were just small-time folks who used alcohol as a way to break into the big leagues.
Do we have any idea how much alcohol was landing on Savannah's shores during the time of Prohibition?
No, we're not exactly sure. It was a lot, though. One of the most famous names of the time period, Bill McCoy, he was very frequent into Savannah. His very first trip from the Caribbean bringing alcohol into the States was here into Savannah. And it really just flowed through. At one point, Savannah had more than 700 blind tigers, which were little tiny juice joints around the city.
Like speakeasies?
Like little tiny speakeasies, little personally owned speakeasies throughout the city. And it was not hard for you to find a drink. There's one story that says, if you came into Savannah and you tried to find how long it took to get a drink, it took about 3 minutes for you to find some place that would serve you booze during Prohibition.
Well, that's time is much shorter now.
Yeah, even shorter.
Yeah. So in the minute that we have left, what remains? Do we still have some of this history in Savannah? Can you walk around and find some of these?
Oh, absolutely. We've got the remnants of Prohibition today with blue laws, where in Savannah you can't buy a drink of alcohol until 12:30 on Sunday in the afternoon, and that's a very recent. It used to be no alcohol on Sundays whatsoever, and that's directly from Prohibition itself.
That is Kayla Black. She's the manager of the American Prohibition Museum, which opens
In mid-April.
Next month sometime, yeah. In Savannah. Kayla, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers. We are live in Savannah. We are here for the annual Stopover Music Festival. Just ahead, Stopover organizer adds two more songs to our Essential Georgia playlist. But first, just in time for Women's History Month, a group of Savannah artists comes together to honor women's rights. This is On Second Thought, and we are hearing live music from our house band this morning, Lulu the Giant.
It's all a bunch of do, 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 do. I don't like you, you don't like me. I don't like myself sometimes, so let's agree. You can judge, but take into account with the measure that you use will be measured back out. And if you can't afford the golden rule, you trade it out for pyrite and play the fool. Then there's no end, nothing to be won. Ain't nothing new under God's good sun. Cause it's all a bunch of ish, it's all a bunch of nonsense. It's all a bunch of do, 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 do. All a bunch of ish, it's all a bunch of nonsense. It's all a bunch of do, 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 do. Velvet kaleidoscope, show me the end of the rope. I'll hang myself upside down, cause there's no glory from the ground up. Ain't no glory from the ground up. You're only rich if you're a founder. Ain't no glory from the ground up. So fill your cup up with love. Give a toast of bread for getting burnt up. Cause it's all a bunch of ish, it's all a bunch of nonsense. It's all a bunch of do, 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 do. All a bunch of ish, it's all a bunch of nonsense. It's all a bunch of do, 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 do. With your hands, mind your own affairs at the end of the day.
This is On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headley. We are broadcasting live from The Gray in Savannah. We're here today and tomorrow. Stopover is not the only thing happening here this weekend. A new exhibit opens tomorrow that's focused on the fight for women's rights. It's called The Personal is Political, and it's a collaboration between ArtRise Savannah and Planned Parenthood. Joining me now is Heather McRae, Exhibitions Director at ArtRise Savannah. Hi, Heather.
Hi, thank you for having us.
It's good to have you. And also with us is the artist, Nikki Johnson, whose work is featured. Hi, Nikki.
Hello.
So, Nikki, why this?
Well, Savannah's my first stop on what's turning out to be a tour across the nation.
Was that intentional to make it a tour?
We definitely have been putting energy towards seeing the work that I made travel. It's a piece that is constructed out of the signage from all of the Planned Parenthoods that have been closed under Scott Walker in Wisconsin.
Isn't it easier to make art that doesn't make people angry, half the population angry?
I don't think my desire is to make people angry through my work. It's really more so to get people to have conversations, and sometimes the most important conversations that we can have are ones that are difficult.
And make people feel passionately.
Absolutely.
So Heather, tell me about this collaboration between ArtRise Savannah and Planned Parenthood. How has that collaboration gone?
So actually, Planned Parenthood Southeast approached us, and they wanted to have Nikki Johnson's work, and they actually asked us also to run a juried show. So we had a call for entries.
For those who don't know, explain what a juried show is as opposed to a curated exhibit.
Well, it's both. So what happens is we open up a call for entries. We ask people from across the globe to submit work. And then we have three jurors select the work. We had Amanda York, Brenda Poku, and Jessica Lee Libos select the work. And then we curate the work into the space in conjunction with Nikki's Hills and Valleys.
So why this one? What made this one, from speaking with those who chose it, why did they like this one?
You mean the collection of works? They all have their own reasons. I mean, it's just about their own interpretation of what it means to have a political stance on feminism and the body and all of the wonderful things that Planned Parenthood Southeast offers as an organization to people. It's more than just, it's about healthcare, it's about all of these things. So they use that to pick the works that were submitted.
So how do you go about turning signs from a closed clinic into art?
Well, there were, what was it? At the beginning when I started collecting the signs, three healthcare centers had been closed. And the aluminum signs were out on a dock and slated for recycling. So I asked if I could take them. I wasn't quite sure what it would turn into. And it ended up being...
You mean you just collected them without knowing what to do with them?
Yeah, usually with my work, I believe in the effective qualities of material and that I think that there's an inherent psychology embedded in each material. So I saw the signs as really kind of holding a, how would I put this? Kind of like a, they were imbued with something that was extremely powerful in its own right, that as the they were signage for Planned Parenthood, but also that they had been defunded. So I knew that if I were to take them apart and reconstruct them into something else, that that language would be imbued in the work itself. So I ended up cutting up the signs on a metal shear, calling a number of volunteers on Facebook because I realized I was either going to need a shoulder replacement or or like a team of help in order to punch all of the signs down into circles with a jeweler's punch. So it ended up becoming a community activity, and I witnessed my studio turn into a space of political activism for others.
Why is it a good fit for Art Rise Savannah?
We are a local nonprofit arts organization, and we believe in providing opportunities for local artists. And, you know, Planned Parenthood Southeast provides health opportunities for local community members. So I feel like it's a very good relationship. We're both nonprofits. We both provide a service to the community, and I think that's important to stand behind other nonprofit organizations when maybe in the current climate we need to band together and be protective of one another.
So the title, The Personal is Political, there's been a lot of pushback ever since the election that politics shouldn't be identity politics, that we should leave identity politics behind. And it feels like this exhibit and the title especially are sort of the argument against that. Is that fair?
I think that identity a lot of the time has something to do with how you feel, you know, in line with your political beliefs. So I feel like it was a conversation that Nikki and some of the people from Planned Parenthood Southeast and we had about what the call would be about. And it is about identity, it is about politics. And that is, I think those are so deeply intertwined for a lot of people. And I think that's where a lot of the divisiveness is coming from right now. It's hard to separate those things. And I think art gives a platform for that, for people to have a voice.
There were several things that we talked about in kind of framing the call itself. One idea was the theory of the body politic, and that those laws that you know, govern what we can do with our bodies, well, our bodies are what end up birthing our nation. You know, the body itself ends up creating the body of our civilization. So we wanted to, you know, we had some conversations around that theory, as well as looking at the historic movements of first and second wave feminism. And the rally cry of The Personal Political seemed to be the best fit that we could find to frame the exhibition that is opening on Friday.
So, nice plug. what about the pushback that there has been lately on the word feminism itself, which I'm sure that you've heard, people saying find another word because that one seems to make people upset, or I guess it's been said by a number of politicians especially that there's no definition for feminism and it's an offensive term.
I would say it just makes people pay attention, as does activism.
I feel like feminism being an offensive term, it seems hard for me to understand that. I mean, you can recognize that females want equal recognition. We want to be responded to in a fair way. I feel like that's the basis of feminism. I don't think that you can dismantle that and just dismiss it and just say, well, that's not fair. I mean, it's how 50% of the population
51%.
Feel. 51% of the population feel. Yeah.
And I also think that if at this point, if there was a better term, we'd be using it.
Yeah.
So we have about a minute or so left. What is this exhibit for women or is it for, you're already shaking your head.
Well, feminism is for everyone.
Yeah. And another thing that that all of the jurors paid special attention to in selecting the work was that Planned Parenthood Southeast is not just about female care. It is about, you know, STD testing. It's about HIV prevention. It's about just standard health care. There's so much more involved, and it's not just about women. And it's not just about, you know, the standard hot button issues. So that's kind of where it's for everyone. It's for personal rights, it's for sexual rights, it's for all of that stuff.
Nikki, do you want to add to that in the last 30 seconds we have?
Oh, well, I think she did a wonderful job.
Enough said. Heather McCray is the exhibitions director for Art Rise Savannah. The gallery is hosting a new feminist exhibit. It's called The Personal is Political. It opens to the public tomorrow. And also with us was the artist featured in that exhibit, Nikki Johnson. Nikki and Heather, thank you both so much.
Thank you.
Thank you again.
We are live in Savannah, and let's hear from Kane Lanahan again, an important voice because she founded the Stopover Music Festival 7 years ago. We asked her to add to our ongoing series, the Georgia Playlist. For this series, we ask people to choose their two favorite songs that are written or performed by another Georgian.
My name is Kane Lanahan, and I'm the founder and CEO of Savannah Stopover Music Festival.
Looking at your watch, third time waiting in the station.
The two songs that I chose were Don't Go Back to Rockville by REM and In the Airplane Over the Sea by Neutral Milk Hotel. Don't Go Back to Rockville is one of my favorites because it was the first album that I really discovered by REM, and it's a unique take on their sound. It's got much more of a alternative country kind of feel and a little bit of twang. It was written by Mike Mills, and just a song that I think has stood the test of time and really sort of kicked off the entire alternative country movement. I think there's a line in the song that says, "Don't go back to Rockville and waste another year." And I think that's something that everybody, particularly in their youth as they're, you know, sort of coming of age, is grappling with in terms of moving away from college and starting their own life. And this sort of tension, in this case, the song is about a relationship, and he's asking his girlfriend not to move home. We all go through periods in our life where we have to make big decisions about what comes next. And, you know, we're trying to accommodate those sort of decisions in the context of the other people in our lives and what's the most important thing to do. And I just think it's just that tension and that pleading of wanting to keep something close but having to make some tough decisions about where you're going to live.
And waste another year.
The other song that I chose is In the Airplane Over the Sea by Neutral Milk Hotel, which is the title song from their second album, which was came out in 1998.
What a beautiful place I have found in this place that is circling all around the sun. What a beautiful dream that could flash on the screen in a blink of an eye and be gone from me.
I think it sort of epitomizes this band. It was one of the seminal bands of the Elephant Six Collective, which came originally out of Denver but relocated to Athens. And it's a very sort of experimental, the lyrics are a bit obscure. It's sort of dark and dreamlike and a bit poetic. And I think it really exemplifies this band at their best. I was very inspired by this whole album just in terms of how it sort of did away with all the sort of the conventional wisdoms of what a folk album should be about. And, you know, I think it really paved the way for a lot of experimentation down the road. I look at a band like Decemberists, and I feel like they really sort of were inspired by, you know, some of what Neutral Milk Hotel did even before them. I don't think that there's a specific Georgia sound. I think the state is so unique in that it has a lot of bands, you know, going back all the way to Otis Redding and some of the soul movement, James Brown, all the way through, you know, to today, and, you know, sort of a distinct sound that came out of Athens, but with, across lots of different musical genres, and I think that's what makes it so exciting.
That was Kane Lanahan. That was her picks for our Georgia playlist. If you have a song or artist that you want to nominate for the playlist, you can call us at 404-500-9457. Calling us is the best because we like to make you sing it a little bit. You can share your musical picks. If you want to see all of the picks for the Georgia playlist, the complete list, visit gpbnews.org and then click on the GPB Music tab. That is our show for today. Our housebound Lulu the Giant is going to play us out. You can see them Saturday night at Trinity United. I'm Celeste Headley. This is On Second Thought from GPB News, live from the Gray Restaurant in Savannah. Let's hear a little bit from our live audience. Hello from Savannah. We will be here again tomorrow. Have a great day.
I'm like a snowflake melting in your palm. As I'm falling in your arms, I'll melt too fast and you'll blame it all on me, though it's not my fault. You chased me down like a child in the night, gonna chase those silly lights in the sky. You still think you can hold on to the wind by keeping a clenched fist? That's not true. But here's what is. Wasn't wrong to let you love me, just let you hold me a little too long, and I fell too fast. Wasn't wrong to let you catch me, just to let myself fall a little too high. Your world of valleys, rivers round the bend, thistles in my hand. You caught my hopes with mountains and new lands, flowers at the end. Found your inscriptions in a book from way back when, for whom your love was meant, they all begin. Dear Marie, wasn't wrong to let you love me, just let you hold me a little too long, and I fell too fast. Wasn't wrong to let you catch me, just let myself go a little too hard. If you let me go, spare me of your pain, I'll forget I ever knew your name. Be as cold as snow, stay far from your flame. Or I may have to be the rain. Wasn't wrong to let you love me, just let you hold me a little too long, and I fell too fast. Wasn't wrong to let you catch me, just let myself fall a little too high. Ooh la la la. From your flame, or I may have to be the rain. Don't let me fall for you again.